Welcome to the Growing Vegetables Down Under podcast. I'm your host, Diana. I want to show you how it's possible to have your very own vegetable garden at home, even if you are working and a busy mum like I am. Join me as I show you how you can have a simple, satisfying, and sustainable vegetable garden. But before we get started, please hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you're listening on Apple and love what you hear, I would really, really appreciate it if you left me a 5-star review and comment. So let's dive into today's topic. Hello, gardeners! And today's topic is the basics of fertilizing. So thanks very much for joining me today. We're going to be talking about how to improve the fertility of your soil. So this is going to be relevant for people who are just starting out, but also seasoned gardeners who maybe want to learn a little bit more about how to keep your soil healthy in order to get a better crop. So we're going to be talking about the three main minerals that you find in your soil, and those are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. We're not going to be talking about soil improvement today in the context of soil types like clay soil and how you might improve that to make it a better soil to be gardening with vegetables. We're going to be talking about those three minerals and instead how plants use those minerals, and therefore explain to you how you can look at a plant that you're growing and know what minerals you need to give that plant in order to have the best possible harvest. So different plants have different nutrient requirements. Some plants are known as what's called heavy feeders, and some plants are known as what's called light feeders. Now, if you've listened to my podcast about broccoli and how to grow bountiful broccoli, you will have heard me say that broccoli and brassicas are what's known as heavy feeders. Now, they are a plant that need a lot of nutrients in order to get the best possible crop. So that's an example of a heavy feeder, while a lot of our root vegetables, like carrots, are known as light feeders, meaning that they're not really that fussy about the levels of nutrients in the soil, save for the fact that if you give them too much of the wrong kind, you might be encouraging the wrong part of the plant to grow. But we will jump to that in a moment. As I said, the three main minerals are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and you'll often see these referred to as N, P, and K. So let's start with nitrogen. Nitrogen is the mineral that gives the plant the energy to grow its leaves. So nitrogen is going to be a really important mineral when you are growing leafy crops like brassicas, like lettuces, or anything that requires the leaves to be big and luscious before the next component of the vegetable plant can grow. So I'm thinking there something like a pumpkin. You need your vine to grow and be a big, long, and healthy vine, which then goes on to produce the flowers and the fruit, which we ultimately harvest. So a pumpkin vine is an example of something that's going to need a lot of nitrogen at the beginning to start growing, but later on is going to be needing the minerals to encourage flowering and fruiting. Now, organic or home sources of nitrogen are coffee grinds. And of course, if you're not a coffee drinker, you can go to a coffee shop. I have never had a coffee shop turn me down for getting rid of their coffee grinds. Now, these are of course the used coffee grinds, not the pre-coffee coffee grinds. And I have taken jars and buckets along to my local cafe, and they're more than happy to fill it up. In fact, one of the cafes near my work actually has it all bagged up at the front door ready to go, which I think is a great initiative, and I would encourage more cafes to do that. But if you are not going to be using coffee grinds and want to focus more on store-bought fertilizers, then blood fertilizer or blood meal is a really good source of nitrogen, and you can buy it separately. However, it is of course most commonly found as a mixture with bone, so you'll get a blood and bone fertilizer. And I use blood and bone fertilizer, and I am very happy with the results I get in my garden. It's always a key ingredient at the change of season for me, and it is something that I add to my garden halfway through the season in order to keep those brassicas thriving. And the third fertilizer, which I think is a great source of nitrogen, would be fish emulsion. So a fish emulsion is basically, and it's a little bit gross, fish parts that are ground up, soaked in water, fermented, and they then turn that into a concentrate, which they sell. Another way to get the benefits of fish emulsion in your garden is actually to buy the fish scraps and to simply bury them in your garden, because you will get the same benefits. This, of course, does take time to break down, so it would be something you would want to be doing at the beginning of every season in order to be leaving those fish heads, for example, in the soil to be breaking down for the next season, while the plants you're growing this season will be benefiting from fish heads you planted last season, which now would have decomposed and be ready in the soil to be absorbed. I have never buried fish heads in my garden. However, it is something that I am going to be experimenting with this coming spring, because if any of you are followers of Vasily's garden, I know that he recommends burying fish heads. I think it's under his tomatoes that he does it. So I'm going to be having a go at that, because I've never done it before and I would like to see the benefits of it. So the next growing season, which will be spring 2021 through to the end of winter 2022, I'm going to be planting those fish heads and getting back to you on what I think is a winner. But in the meantime, as I said, fish emulsion is a great source of nitrogen. So it comes in a liquid form. It's a concentrate. You'll add it to your watering can and pour it onto your plants. Now, if you follow me on Facebook or Instagram, you will know that I'm an advocate of Fish Friday and Seaweed Saturday. So seaweed solutions and fish emulsions are recommended to be put on your garden every fortnight. And what I do is I alternate them. So ultimately, I'll be putting a seaweed concentrate on my garden once a month and a fish emulsion on my garden once a month. And I call this Fish Friday and Seaweed Saturday. So make sure you follow me on Facebook or Instagram in order to get those reminders so that you don't miss a fertilizing weekend. Fish emulsions, nitrogen to phosphorus and potassium ratio, remember we talked about NPK, is 4:1:1, which means it has four times as much nitrogen than it has potassium or phosphorus. So it is actually very heavy in nitrogen. Now, what happens if you go and put a heavy nitrogen product like fish emulsion onto a plant like a carrot, where it's not the leaves that you're growing, but it's the root? The answer is you get very leafy carrots and very small bulbs. And this can happen with any of your root vegetables. It can happen with beetroots, it can happen with radishes. And if in the past you have had very lush and leafy crops, but the bulbs have just not developed, then I'm going to go ahead and guess that it was because you had an excess of nitrogen in your soil. So with a fish emulsion, when you've got 4:1:1 as your ratio, so four times as much nitrogen to the other two, I would be still putting this on my root vegetables, because of course it is essential that a carrot still grows its leafy green top in order to photosynthesize and then develop the root. But you would not be pouring an awful lot on. You would be pouring it on, but it would be a nice shower of fish emulsion, and you would be concentrating your fish emulsion onto your lettuces or your brassicas at this time of year. So please do use these sources of nitrogen on all of your crops, but remember that they are heavy in nitrogen and the purpose of them is to develop leaves. So when you are fertilizing on crops that the leaves are not the part you are consuming, then make sure you use it, I won't say sparingly, but use it consciously so that you do not end up with very, very leafy carrots. But while we're talking about carrots, this is a really great segue into phosphorus, which is the P in NPK. Because phosphorus is the mineral that does develop roots. So something like your carrots is going to love you for putting phosphorus in the soil for them, because then you are going to be getting those whopper-sized carrots that you see people putting on Instagram. I will just make a comment here and say, of course, if you do want to grow giant versions of any vegetable, you do need to make sure you're planting a variety that is designed to grow big. There are miniature varieties of certain vegetables, there are average varieties of certain vegetables, and so if you're wanting to grow big versions of anything, make sure you look at the variety you're growing and make sure it is a variety that is actually able to get that big. But back to phosphorus. So the main fertilizer that encourages root growth is bones. I have compots, and I'm not saying compost, I'm saying compot, and these are a in-ground composting system. So it is sort of the size of a mid-range pot that's buried in the ground with lots and lots of holes in it to allow worms to access the food. It's got a lid on top which locks, and you cover it with I cover it with lucerne, but you can cover it with any hay or any kind of mulch. Dead leaves would be fine as well. And I put into this all our meat scraps, including our bone scraps. And what happens is the soldier flies come in and do their thing, and then the worms will come in and eat the leftover product in your compote. And this is the way that I get bones or bone meal into my soil. In addition, I have mentioned I do use blood and bone. So you can buy just bone meal, but it's much easier to just buy blood and bone, and then you're getting nitrogen and phosphorus. And in fact, some blood and bone fertilizers are actually fortified with potassium. We will get to that in a moment. But as I said, bone meal is the way that you get phosphorus into your soil. I've also mentioned fish emulsion with that NPK ratio of 4:1:1. So it does have one part phosphorus in there. And you can use fish emulsion as a way of getting phosphorus into your soil. But of course, the fish skeletons themselves are going to have a lot more phosphorus in them than nitrogen. So this might be an example if you want to experiment with the method of burying fish carcasses and bones and heads in your ground, then you can be planting fish skeletons in the soil underneath your carrots and just see how it goes. Of course, you do need to plan ahead to make sure that your bones are breaking down sufficiently in order to feed the crops at the time they need it. And so you're going to be wanting to put those fish bones into the ground a season ahead of your root crop, like your carrots or whatever. And this, of course, is the problem that a lot of people have when it comes to fertilizing. We're so busy that we often don't have the time to think ahead with something like this. And that is why store-bought fertilizing products have become popular and are easy to use, especially in the beginning when you're having a go and seeing what grows well in your backyard. This is why I personally buy blood and bone, because it is easy, it is simple, and it is immediate. You put this on the soil, or you dig it into the soil, depending on whether or not you've planted your crops yet. You can sprinkle blood and bone around the top and water it in, and those minerals then break down and trickle down to your roots. But this is the benefit. It is an immediate source of food, whereas my compote or any fish heads, for example, that you might bury, they are taking time to break down. So it really depends on where you are in your planting cycle and how confident you are at having a go with some of these more natural methods of fertilizing. And when I say that, I mean you're buying fish heads from the fish shop as opposed to relying on a manufactured product. Of course, getting fish heads or getting bones from your local supplier is always going to be more sustainable than buying bagged products that have been produced somewhere else and transported to your local nursery and then transported home by you. The carbon footprint, of course, is going to be less if you're using locally sourced products, but it's not always possible. And when you are learning how to garden and learning how to do this, sometimes it is just easier to buy the store-bought products, and that is fine. The fact that you are gardening and growing your own food is already beginning to reduce your carbon footprint. And being sustainable and reducing our impact is about doing what you can do. It's not about running yourself ragged and making life harder for yourself. Gardening is meant to be pleasurable. It's meant to be enjoyable. You're meant to find satisfaction in growing your own food, as well as benefiting from those health benefits of having organic food, as well as benefiting from the sustainability and carbon footprint reduction by having it in your backyard and not having those transport and agriculture carbon footprints attached to your food. So remember, try to keep it simple, but in the future, hopefully as these podcasts develop, I can focus on how to plan and encourage you to try some of these more sustainable fertilizing techniques. Now let's move on to the last mineral, which is potassium. So we've covered nitrogen, which is about leafy growth. We've covered phosphorus, which is about root development, and now we're on to potassium, which you're probably going to guess is all about flowers and fruits. The best way to get potassium in a sustainable and small carbon footprint method is banana peels. We know bananas are high in potassium, and so are their skins. And if you soak these banana peels in water for a few days, till the water starts to go cloudy, and pour this onto your soil, then you're going to be giving your plants an immediate source of potassium that they can access right away. That is why I encourage people to soak their bananas, because you're actually leaching the potassium out of the banana peel. In my house, what we do is we soak those banana peels over and over until they go black, and then we just toss them into the garden and they decompose very quickly, or I put them into the compote. If my kids are outside eating bananas, then they know just to throw the banana peel straight into the veggie patch. And so it's great to walk along there and see my decomposing banana peels that the kids have tossed straight in. As I mentioned before, blood and bone can be a store-bought source of potassium. So blood and bone does not have potassium in it, but some manufacturers will fortify it with potassium. Now, I have no idea where that potassium source comes from, but it is important that you read the label to look at that NPK ratio and actually see how much potassium is in there compared to the nitrogen and the phosphorus. Have they put so much potassium in there that your NPK ratio is actually pretty even and therefore you are getting an all-round basic fertilizer? Or is the nitrogen and phosphorus still considerably higher than your potassium and therefore it's good to know that there is potassium in there, but this really isn't going to be the best fertilizer for your tomatoes, for example? So if you're putting banana peels onto your garden, you are going to be getting a pretty good sustained release of potassium, but you do need to be a banana eating family in order to get enough potassium to be feeding something like a tomato plant or a
well, back to our pumpkin vine, like a pumpkin, you think of how big that pumpkin is going to get, and some vines are producing multiple pumpkins, you're really going to be having to give these plants a lot of bananas. So we actually save our banana peels all of winter. Even though over winter we're not really growing many fruiting crops, we do, of course, have flowering crops like broccoli because you're eating the flowers of broccoli. But I don't add extra banana over winter to flowering crops like broccoli and cauliflower. I rely on the fortified blood and bone to give them the potassium that they need. So over winter, we save all our bananas and they just dry out really easily. They just live in a bucket and they dry out. So when it comes to the beginning of spring, I soak those guys for a good couple of weeks. And remember, every time the water goes cloudy is when I'm emptying the water onto the garden and then I'm refilling it and then putting those banana peels, I save them up and I put them underneath the tomato when I'm planting it so that they're breaking down in the soil right where the roots are of my tomato plant. And believe it or not, I have found that this is a sufficient level of potassium for my garden. So I rely on the blood and bone fortified potassium. In addition to that, of course, Seaweed Saturday and Fish Friday, my seaweed concentrate and my fish emulsion do have levels of potassium in it. Yes, they are nitrogen heavy, but they do have potassium. And so my fruiting crops do really well simply from saving all my bananas. And of course, if you get those overripe bananas that nobody wants to eat, I tend to freeze ours and put them into banana cakes and smoothies later. But if that's just not something your family is going to eat, then stick it in the garden because your tomatoes and your pumpkins are going to love that mushed up black banana. And we all know that sometimes bananas get lost in school bags for a week or two. And I guess for me, this is a way of feeling like they're not wasted. Their purpose is still met because they have given my pumpkin vine the energy it needs to feed my family for a couple of pumpkin soup meals. So thank you, mashed up banana. Now we've covered off the three main minerals, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And in amongst that, we've also talked about seaweed solutions, which I'll just emphasize they're higher in nitrogen and phosphorus and they have very little potassium. There is potassium there, but very little potassium. And we've covered off on fish emulsions, which are really high in nitrogen and have equal levels of phosphorus and potassium. Both seaweed tonics or seaweed concentrates and fish emulsions can be used as what's called a follicular spray or a follicular feeder. What this means is that when you spray it onto the leaves of your plant as opposed to the soil, the plants can actually absorb those nutrients through the leaves. So they are absorbing it through, I guess, their follicles, and that's where the follicular term comes from. Of course, it can go straight on the soil, and when you're spraying it or watering it onto your garden, of course there's going to be runoff into the soil, and that is just as beneficial. But do be mindful that, yes, these plants can actually get that immediate feast of nitrogen and those lesser minerals of phosphorus and potassium through their leaves. And that's one of the reasons people really like to use seaweed concentrates and fish emulsions, because you're giving your plants everything they need right now. And both of these come in concentrate forms. They come in liquid forms. I have seen seaweed concentrate. This actually comes in a powder form, and that's just as useful. I personally use sea salt because I like the fact that it attaches to my hose. And so I can spray the garden and it kind of is sucked up through the bottle, through the hose, and it's all in one contraption. And I just like that because it's easy. The fish emulsion that I use is Charlie Carp, and that comes in a bottle which I need to put into a watering can and pour onto my garden. So just a quick recap while we're here, what I personally use coffee grinds. I personally use blood and bone. I use fish emulsion. I use seaweed concentrate. I have my in-ground composting systems called a compot. I will put the link to their website in the description for this podcast in case you're interested. And I do have a discount code for them, which I can't remember off the top of my head. I emailed them and asked them if they'd be willing to give me a discount code, and they have. I'm not an affiliate. I don't make any money from that discount code, but I love my compots. I have 8. When I ran the community garden in my neighborhood, we installed them in all the gardens up there as well. They're just so simple. And in addition to that, of course, are my banana peels. So no banana is ever wasted in this household. The very last product I use to add minerals to my soil, and these are not the key ones like nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. These are not those basic ones. These are all the other little minerals that you've heard of because as humans we need them, like copper, zinc, manganese, and magnesium. Now, these are the minerals that are most commonly found in volcanic ash. So we all know that the landscape around volcanoes is incredibly fertile. And one of the reasons it's fertile is because the lava and the ash that comes out of the volcano settles on the landscape there. And it has all these amazing nutrients in them that have come up from the Earth's core. And plants thrive on them. But it's not just the plants, it's the microorganisms, the microbes and the fungi that live in your soil. So your soil is never going to be healthy unless you have these microorganisms living in there. I really encourage you to go back and listen to episode 2 if you haven't, because I talk more about dirt and what's in your dirt and why your dirt is so important. And there was an awesome statistic in there that I can't remember right now, but it's something crazy like 25% of life on Earth is actually living in your soil. And so these microorganisms, the microbes, the fungi, they are what's making the soil healthy. And the minerals found in the lava and the ash that's come out of the volcano, which has settled on the ground, these minerals break down slowly over time and feed all those microorganisms. And so you get this incredibly fertile soil. So what does this have to do with your backyard veggie patch? Well, you can actually buy bagged rock minerals. And even for gardeners who are trying to be almost 100% sustainable, almost 100% organic, almost 100% DIY, reuse everything you've got, rock minerals are still something I think I would encourage you to buy. So rock minerals are different to rock dust. Rock dust can be a bit dodgy. So I just recommend buying something that says rock minerals and it's on the bag. It's talking about the fact it's come from this volcanic ash area, or it's been mined from a particular layer of the Earth's crust that we know are really high in these minerals. Because of course, when a volcano erupts, it's all those minerals from that Earth's crust that are being brought up to the surface. And it's lots of tiny little rocks. And when I'm saying tiny, they're still a bit smaller than a pea. And you just sprinkle them onto your soil. And I do this I definitely do at the beginning of each season. I definitely do it when I'm replenishing my garden beds or if I'm starting again. And then sometimes I do it halfway through a season if I just feel like things are not thriving. But mostly it's a once at the beginning of each season, so 4 times a year, and it's about a handful per square meter. So the bag of rock minerals I have now, I have had for donkey's years. They come in quite small bags, about 2 kilos, and it will last you forever. But I really recommend keeping it. It's not hard to store because it's quite small, and because those plants are going to be so happy soaking up all those minerals, and the microorganisms in your soil are going to love you. But also, what is really important for you as a human is that we need all these minerals. And one of the problems with mass agriculture is that the soil is getting overworked and these minerals are not being replaced. And therefore, the plants that we are eating are not absorbing the minerals because they're lacking in the soil. And so we are not getting them. And we need zinc, we need magnesium, but the food that we're eating from mass agriculture
does not have enough of these nutrients anymore because the soil is so depleted and overused. And this is one of the big benefits of growing your own vegetables, because you can ensure that the food you're growing is getting essential minerals and absorbing those minerals so that you and your family are eating them. And it is so simple to buy a bag of rock minerals and tick that box. And that brings us to the end of the basics of fertilizing. Now, there is just one more thing I want to talk about. Doesn't really fit into fertilizing, but it's just a side comment that is worth noting, and that's about soil pH. I think that this is probably worthy of its own podcast, but soil pH is quite important. You can buy a pH tester that looks like a thermometer from your local nursery. They're about 10 bucks, and you stick it in the ground and it's going to tell you what the pH is. Because after you've done all this fertilizing, you want to make sure your pH is neutral at about 7. And that is assuming you're growing vegetables who like to grow at a neutral pH. Most of them do, but not all. Blueberries is a great example. Blueberries like really acidic soil down at about the 4 to 5 mark. But as a general rule, most vegetables you're growing in your backyard are going to like a nice neutral soil. So when you've put in all these fertilizers into your soil, it's worth just popping that pH tester into the ground and checking what the pH is and making sure that it's the right pH for the plants that you're growing. But as I said, 7 is a really good guide because most plants are really happy with a neutral pH. And that wraps it up for today. Thank you so much for joining me, and make sure you stop by next Tuesday for our next Chatty Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining me today. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Growing Vegetables Down Under. On Facebook, we also have the Growing Vegetables Down Under community, which is a group where you can share your successes or possibly your failures and ask for help. I would love to see you in that group, and I am able to provide any advice you'd like on that platform. If you have any comments or suggestions about other topics you'd like me to cover, just leave them in the comments below or send me a DM. Looking forward to seeing you next time. Happy gardening!